Hello and welcome back to Stanima, a Survivor Panama rewatch podcast brought to you by the Bitter Jurors Network for the Survivor offseason this summer. As always, I'm your host, Christine Palin, and we are back this week to discuss Fight for Your Life or Eat. I did not check what episode number this is. I should have done that, but we're like episode 10 or 11. Who knows? We're into the merge now. Terry's still winning immunity. They cannot get rid of him. And I am joined today by a very, very exciting guest. From my neighboring province of Ontario, please welcome to the pod, Survivor 42's Omer Zahir.
Thank you for having me. Wait, to which side? You're in Quebec, right?
I'm in Quebec, unfortunately.
Not a Manitoba girly.
No, not a Manitoba girly. Actually, I would rather be a Quebec girly than a Manitoba girly. but yes, I am. I'm not from Quebec. I'm from the States originally, but I do live here. So not terribly far from you, but yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I wanted to say you were one of the first people I thought of for this podcast because I had seen you like randomly just apropos of absolutely nothing, like tweet about Sally sometimes. And I was like, I like filed that away. So I'm glad we could have you on for Sally's tragic boon.
Swan song,
Swan song. We'll talk about Sally's swan song. Very beautiful. And we'll talk about your thoughts on her. And another robbed goddess in a moment. But before we get into that, obviously the people know you from playing on Survivor. You were one of my favorites on Survivor 42, not just saying that because you're here. But can you give the folks, you know, your background with Survivor? You know, was it a long time, you know, since childhood, a more recent development? Where, yeah, tell me your story.
Yeah, so I was actually at Walmart and I was recruited for the show. No, I'm kidding. I have watched since I was like 9 years old, episode 8 of Borneo, Greg Went Home, wild episode, and hooked ever since, and have super fan status. I've seen every episode, sometimes more than once, and early on in my career of Survivor watching, occasionally the VCR would not record, and I remember being devastated, and I would wait and wait until it came out on DVD so I could finally see the episode I missed. So it's been quite a ride, and thank you for having me, because Panama has always been one of my favorite seasons, although I think in hindsight, you know, I'm not sure it quite lives up to how I felt about it as a kid, but it is still quite good.
So when you were a kid, what can you remember like what was it about this season that spoke to you?
I think it was the utter chaos of Kasaya, but then also the underdog story of Lamina. And I'm the world's probably the biggest and only potentially Lamina apologist on the show. Now, that being said, I do think that Lamina is very top heavy in that there are probably 3 to 4 people that really were interesting, and then the rest were kind of not so much. But I didn't think that they were as boring as everybody said. And I could probably name like 6 more boring tribes than Lamina, but we won't get into it. But I think that they also, like at the time as a kid, I was kind of dumb. So I was kind of rooting for Lamina even over Kasaya because they were two. And well, Lamina and Suri, that was probably the two. But the thing about Lamina is that even like Terry, he's a flawed character. Like he's not my favorite person in the world. And he is kind of a little bit entitled and a little bit, I mean, in an underdog role though, I mean, there is something there to root for, but he's also like a flawed underdog in many, many ways. And I think that I also enjoyed Survivor's other flawed underdog in PG Law. I found that they have a very similar style while they're on the bottom, and it's kind of interesting to watch. I thought that Sally was a great underdog, and I thought that Austin was actually a decent narrator. And Dan, he's just like, did you know that he was an astronaut? Can you believe it?
Did you know he competed on BattleBots? Because we learned that while recording. He competed on BattleBots like 3 years ago.
What?
So you can look that up if you want to look at Danbury BattleBots later. There's a picture of him like squatting over the BattleBot, and the BattleBot has little anime eyes on it.
Oh, he's been within 10 miles of that spot in Panama several times, vertically, as he says. But yeah, I thought that it was just a well-rounded cast. I think I liked that they went back to 16 people. Mm-hmm. I liked some of the the wrestling challenge forever burned in my memory. Love when Jeff yelled, "Suri sitting on Sally." Misty choking Aris, like, so funny. And obviously Kasaya, it goes without saying. There's no need to defend what they are. They were just hilarious.
So you've evoked her. And when we were planning out to have you on the podcast, you were very bummed you could not claim Misty's boot episode. So yes. Like, I'll take Sally. So I would like to open a segment. It's a one-time segment. Only you get it. And it's called the Misty Morning Moment.
Ooh.
So the floor is yours. What would you like to say about Misty?
I think somebody said her off. Yeah, somebody said on Twitter, Misty was Parvati before Parvati, and that is very true. Misty was bringing it, unlike several of the other people on her tribe, and it's a shame that she got voted out so early because she was smarter than a lot of those people. And, you know, she had the flirtation, the charm, the smarts, you know, the way she tried to trick her people into thinking she had the immunity idol, the fact that she would shamelessly flirt, but also had a plan in the back of her mind. I thought it was great. Misty and the papaya, you know, that's a lot as well. So it was a shame to see her go so early when she had so much potential. But I am glad her sister, Survivor Sal, got to survive a little bit longer. And you know who was bringing nothing to the table was Ruth Marie. And I think that she should have been voted out before Misty. That being said, Ruth Marie, I remember watching the early show. Do you remember the early show?
I remember the early show, yeah.
Yeah, Ruth Marie's early show boot interview. And my God, this woman is so chaotic and like lively in person, but on the island, it was an absolute zero. So
really?
That was quite a stark contrast. She was so bubbly. And I was like, oh, I guess I see why she was casted. But maybe this is because she's fed and has coffee. Who's to say?
Mm. I'm going to have to dig up the Ruth Marie early show segment, because I definitely remember watching that. But like, she certainly didn't stand out at the time. I was quite young when this season aired, and I don't think I was keeping tabs on Ruth Marie's appearances on the early show.
It could have been that wasn't that interesting, but it's just such a stark contrast from what was on the show that it was surprising, I have to say.
Well, I'm glad you had the chance to send Misty off.
Yeah.
You know, Naomi gave her a pretty good send off, I think, but I wanted to make
Curse
sure.
Curse of the M, though, that's also
yes.
Misty and Melinda, although she was her second tribal, but first tribal as new Kasaya. Melinda was annoying, though, I have to say. Melinda not a Rob G.Otis. So good riddance.
No, like Melinda's like, okay, I get it.
I think she should have been included before the show started.
I think I saw she's like still singing in a club in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, which I love for her.
Oh, Pigeon.
I hope that's where Dolly Parton
is. I have to rethink that. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll have to rethink
no
everything.
No relation,
now.
I assume. Pigeons, birds, interesting.
Wait, is she going to be on claim to fame as Dolly Parton's relative?
I think we're onto something.
All right, got it. I'll file that in the back of my mind.
And you get extra prize money if you can recognize Melinda from Survivor Panama.
Yes.
You can name her full name.
Yeah, what if somebody named Melinda and claimed to fame, and then they're like, I mean, I guess that's right, but it's not what we were going for.
Oh my God. I think a great claim to fame season, hold on, this is a great idea, is like to dig up like the relatives of like early 2000s, early boots on Survivor.
Ooh, yeah. I like it a lot. You know, we could get BB Anderson, the late BB Anderson's young wife, as they talked about on the show. She must be his age now, so that would work.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a good idea.
Stacey Stillman, you know,
oh, dig of her course. Up from the grave. It's her birthday today. We're recording on her birthday.
Happy birthday, Stacey. I hope
a
you're enjoying that.
A true trailblazer.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're enjoying all that money you probably got from your lawsuit.
Your legal settlement. would love to hear from her. We'll never hear from her again, though.
No. Maybe T-Bird can track her down.
Track her down to like crack open the CBS NDA that I'm sure is quite sturdy. If anyone can do it, it's T-Bird.
Oh yeah, she's persistent, we know.
Oh goodness. Well, shall we get into the episode?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So following Austin's boot, I love that it just opens on Terry just giving his pilot lore. And it's like,
Oh my God.
The Naval Academy, where he said last episode, the Naval Academy, where no one lies, cheats, and steals.
Yeah.
Where everyone is perfect. He just like, you know, he's listing off all his accomplishments. I like what you said about Terry being like, you know, he's certainly, I think most people would read him as a villain of the season just because Kasaya, they're like the narrative core of the season. So by virtue of that, Terry is like in this antagonist position, but he is an underdog, but he does not act like one. And it is like, if he had been more like humble, this season wouldn't have been as funny because it's like, they cannot get rid of this like extremely cocky man.
Yeah. Everybody else is being, you know, quite, you know, taking being on the bottom with a lot of grace and class, but Terry's like, no, I'm going to make a fool of myself. I don't give a shit. I don't know if I can say that. I'm going to just
you
let
can
it
say
rip.
That.
Doesn't matter. And Terry, okay, so I already compared Terry and PG as very similar characters as underdogs, although I found PG to be more likable personally.
Yes.
My favorite in China. But there's also one other minority Pagong tribe member that also had a lot of Terry PG energy in the first six seasons. Do you know who I'm thinking of?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, Jake. From Surviving Jake. Thailand.
Oh my God, it's been so long since I watched Thailand.
Yeah, well, maybe, I was like, who? Maybe don't, but very similar yeah. energy on the bottom where he wouldn't stop talking about his life. He wouldn't stop trying. He made all these really terrible deals, hoping people would take them. The thing about Terry is he does not understand Survivor.
No.
And I don't know if that's a hot take, but like, what the actual F? He is just going up to random people. It's very much like those people that go on rewards and are like, this could be the final five, but it's like these random people you pick via rocks and have no connection to one another whatsoever. But he and PG both, like, they would just, you know, you have to respect the hustle to try. Like, they're going to different combinations
yeah.
that make no absolute sense. They don't take a second to like think about the dynamics. They just go in on it. And I think that, you know, Terry, I think PG was more likable because she had a broader, like more broad character arc, whereas Terry is like so entitled that it's also a little bit annoying. But, you know, I think that he made the season. I think I disagree though that he was the villain of the season because I think America like loved him.
And well, yeah, America loved him for sure.
Yeah. And I didn't really like fully get it, but I did appreciate an underdog story. And when Terry was on the top, he was insufferable. Like, let me be clear about that. And on the bottom, one could argue he was insufferable as well. However, there was a bit of, you know, at least he's trying to break up this group and he's really getting under Aris's skin. And that's kind of funny, you know?
Yeah, no, like I think that Terry, like he's someone that is just was received so differently by America as he's received now by like people who like podcast and like tweet about Survivor. And like, I'm like among the people who have been on the podcast, no one has a positive thing to say about him. But like, it's just like, other than like, you know, he's a fun character and yeah. you know, his presence on this season makes the season more interesting. But it's just like so much has changed in Survivor about the kind of people the general public really responds to. I mean, you still have, you know, the certain archetypes that are enduring. But like, this is kind of before we're starting to see, this is around the era we start to see this change a bit more, where like, it's okay to like be a villain and like mm-hmm. we start to like villains more. This is obviously pre-Russell Hantz, where that really changed, where he was the most popular person on his season.
Right.
But Terry was like perfect for this era of Survivor. You know, the next Tom Westman, you know, all American hero. Kids probably, I know kids loved him. I never really loved him, but I as a kid, but I know a lot of people who like when they were young, they thought he was like a hero. But he's someone who just receives so much differently now that we like are looking at the game from a different perspective.
I mean, truly an incredible competitor. Like his ability to focus, laser focus on the task at hand and accomplish it is second to none. I think he's one of the best competitors ever on the show, although it didn't really translate to the tribal challenges. Where was that energy?
Loser.
When saving Terry. But I think that he has an amazing laser focus, but he's so like, so bad. You don't have to think about a thing for 2 weeks. Like, why is that your pitch to every single person? Like, shut up, Terry. Just you better off saying nothing. Go send in the softer Sally or the charming Austin to try to win people over, and you just sit in the background with your immunity idol. Like, and also the whole non-committal nature. Actually, the epitome of Terry is after the fighter pilot story, when he sits there and says to them, "Okay, guys, how do I fit into your six?" It's like, take a hint, read the room. Like, you're not a part of that, and they don't give a shit about you. So they want you on. So take the hint, Terry. But he can't. He can't.
So I want your take on, so we were talking a lot at the Merge episode and last episode too of what, like, Lamina's whole strategy of trying to break into Kasaya, specifically what Terry's doing, like you said, going up to random people. We all agree it wasn't great. Like, do you think there's a universe where they could have turned this around? Like, Lamina, like, is what, like, yeah, get, tell me, like, what do you think Lamina should have done here?
So I think that, well, what's interesting is I think that I was a little bit surprised that Sally stayed so strong with Lamina after she was totally on the bottom. But, you know, I guess being at the bottom of four is still better than being at the bottom of six, which would be seven. However, I think that Courtney especially was like the window in. And Courtney is outrageous. Courtney, I tweeted this the other day because it's true. But Courtney has no, even less ability than Terry to read the room. Courtney is completely tone deaf and at every possible corner, but, and she's so zany and so crazy and so kooky and so just annoying. Like, I could not imagine living with Courtney for 4 days, let alone however long she's lasted. However, in that craziness, the thing I appreciate about Courtney as a character is she's still trying to win the game. She says in this episode, "I want to take Terry to the end because he is so unlikable that I will win." And it's not a great read because in order to get to the end, Terry would have to backstab no one and she would have to backstab everyone and she's annoying and she doesn't know that. However, I think that Courtney, you could tell she was really, really responding to the fact that Terry might play the idol on Sally. And then that was Terry's opportunity. This is jumping ahead in the episode. But
yeah, of course.
As you're playing the immunity idol on Sally. And then he's like, "I'm not saying I have the immunity idol. Like, why are you even hiding it at this point? There's no reason. It's a super idol. You play it after. It doesn't matter. Let them know. Yeah, I got it. And yeah, I'm going to F you up with it. So you better jump on board now." And Courtney is the type of player, I think, to make a move at that point. But I also think the other mistake that Sally and, well, Sally doesn't make mistakes, but if she were to make one, and Terry as well, I think that the mistake was also announcing so publicly that Aris was going to go home with the idol. Because if that's the case, then use that as leverage to flip him because he's going home. He has no incentive to stay loyal to Kasaya if he's going home. But also, if you're telling everybody, if you're telling Suri, you're telling Danielle, you're telling Courtney, who all, well, maybe not Suri, but the other two want Aris gone anyways, they have no reason to flip with you if you're just going to, they can stay true to their alliance and Aris can go home and you can burn your immunity idol. You know, like, that is just bad negotiation and leverage. That's terrible leveraging of an immunity idol. Like, you all knew how to leverage an immunity idol. Terry does not know how to leverage an immunity idol.
As we saw last episode, he knows how to do a somersault, but he does not know how to.
Correct.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point that, like, that what he's proposing on paper, yeah, it's not a bad idea to get Aris out. Like, he's clearly, like, the, as of right now, him and Sri are the most, like, stable within the Kasaya alliance, and it makes sense that Terry views Aris as more of a competitor based on who Terry is and a threat to challenges. But the second he tells them, it takes out, you know, it's like, okay, like, well, the worst that could happen is this guy we've seen Sri, Danielle and Courtney be kind of like, yeah, we need to get Aris out eventually. Whereas, you know, the whole point of the idol is like, who's going to go if, like, this thing happens?
Yeah. And
to the point of, like, Courtney, we just couldn't believe that the last two episodes we recorded, obviously we don't know if there was something not shown, but from what we saw, this was the first time he pitched Courtney. And it felt like that should have, we were wondering, is it just because they find her really annoying and they don't even want to work with her? But, like, Courtney is someone, I think if they had worked a little more, she would have, because, like, we saw, like, last episode, she and Aris really weren't getting along. Like, you know, she was constantly, like, worried about Aris. and her, you know, she's very competitive. It just feels like a blind spot to have, like, just kind of have her be the last
disregarded
option.
Yeah. And she also, I mean, I guess on paper, she seems so Kasaya strong. So I can see going for someone like, well, definitely Bruce. Like, Bruce is like, I mean, Bruce sucks. I think Bruce, okay, we'll get back to Bruce. But I think that they literally, Courtney said it in the episode that Austin went home, was like, you know what? If Aris goes home because Austin plays the immunity idol, whatever. Because mm-hmm. they're literally giving them the opportunity to have their cake and eat it too. They have to make them work for it. And I think if the thing is, Kasaya hasn't turned on each other. So it's hard for Lamina to get in. And it's harder for Lamina to get in when there's so many people from their tribe. So this is, I feel like, was the prime time when it was just Terry and Sally. People are not threatened by Terry's relationship with Austin anymore, with Nick anymore. Inspirational final words and all. they don't think that they knew Sally was on the bottom. So it's like Terry and Sally together. This is the opportunity where he's immune and he can provide immunity to Sally, or at least bluff that he's going to where, you know, all they had to do was go back to camp and be like, I'm giving the immunity idol Sally tonight. One of you is going home, and let them turn on each other. And then they know that one of them is going home. So then that will expose the cracks. Whereas if you go out there and be like, we're voting for Aris, like, it doesn't give them any reason to turn on each other at all. And so I think that they could have done something, but they played it all wrong. I mean, Terry played it all wrong.
Terry, Sally, you know, she's innocent.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think Terry understandably was like, I don't want to lose the idol. But it's like, what he, by not playing the idol here, he basically made it so he only had one path to the end, which is Lisa's at the game stands right now. Like, he's further solidifying himself as enemy number one. He has no one left. He just has to come out and play the idol. Whereas if he played the idol, yes, it's a bigger risk because he could be exposed in the coming rounds. But then if you have to hope that by doing that, by cracking open Kasaya, you have multiple paths forward. And obviously it's easier said than done in a game for $1 million. He was like, I'd rather have the guarantee.
And you have to let them crack themselves too. Like, literally all they have to do is be like, Sally's getting the idol tonight, whether he gives it to her or not, and then say that we don't know who we're voting for tonight, but you come and let us know and we'll consider your options. And then they have to do the work themselves. Like, you cannot crack them. They have to crack themselves, but you can use circumstances to expedite that process. And they did not. Terry did not do that.
it's a real missed opportunity. I mean, I'm sad Sally went. It sets up for a very funny, you know, dynamic moving forward. And it just not, like, Terry is, this is going to be a hoot moving forward of Terry in this position. We know he can't go next week, at least, because he has the idol, you know. But it would have been interesting to see someone use the super idol in this way of, like, kind of like, we're doing, it's either Russian roulette or you guys figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I really think that's where the fractions would have happened. Like, you have Aris and Sari, Danielle and Courtney, and Danielle has Bruce, but then Aris and Courtney and Danielle are very opposed. Shane is Shane. Like, it would have been chaos.
Yeah, no, that would have been a beautiful vote. And instead we got to see another Rob goddess sent home.
Unfortunately,
many such cases this season. But as Azar says, he's not an American gladiator. So he is not a risk taker. So that will not happen. But we get this. I love this reward challenge. I think the cradle rope thing, have they done this any other time? I think this is such a cool challenge.
They did this in Samoa. Season?
Okay, yes.
But also, what's so funny about what you just said is I wrote in my notes, this reward challenge sucks.
I love this challenge. Okay, I think the reason I love this challenge is it is burned into my brain because I should have recorded this, but it's the way Danielle says, careful, Shane. I just, like, every time I watch it, I think it's like a Pavlovian response. I'm like, she's going to say, careful, Shane. She's going to say, careful, Shane. So I think that's why I love it.
She's a captain of sports.
Careful, Shane. The immunity item.
Immunity item.
You know?
Iconic.
So that's fair. So what did you not like about this challenge? In retrospect, I think it's just because we get careful, Shane.
I just think that this challenge is so, it's stationary. It's so long. And once you know who's in the lead, that lead is not going to change. Like, because you can clearly see the numbers, and they're not going to like make a huge comeback to get the last four flags. Like, I don't know. It's kind of, I thought it was dumb. And I hate the new, not new era, because that's the newest era, but like when the shift started to happen, where they started to do a lot of team rewards after the merge, I hate that. I love the more individual ones or the smaller groups, like two or three, because these groups are often arbitrarily chosen at random or by a pick'em, which is a little bit more interesting, but it just doesn't result in any sort of interesting choice. I think when people have the choice of stuff, that is where the game is the most interesting. And even and information can be gleaned and changes can be made. Like, remember, Kim chooses Alicia and Chelsea to go on a reward and Kat freaks out. We don't get that when it's a team reward like this, you know? And for some reason, every single time, somebody will be like, I'm taking you, and then they won't take that person. And that's drama. That's drama every time. And so I get that they want like these big dramatic productions and like larger challenges. And I feel like they can do that, but not do it in this way. And I feel like it loses a lot of the drama.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because I mean the greatest example of that is the Micronesia, you know, the Eric situation, where that was used really strategically. Yes. Of who was picked to create the illusion of more of a rift, well, create a more of an actual rift between Natalie and Eric by influencing him to choose Amanda to like repair the rift they had. It's like a Suri legend. Gameplay, but yeah, it's I mean, we talk about this on the Bitter Jurors main podcast, of like a lot of our frustrations about 44. Love the season overall, but in terms of the game design of like removing choice from the players and like forcing them into risks rather than seeing them choose them themselves, and like seeing like having this be an individual reward and seeing who gets to watch their family tapes. Like, especially with the family where it's at, just like,
drama.
Like, this would have been a great one. Like, I think Shane would have been a lot more upset if he didn't get picked rather than he just didn't win.
Well, not to spoil the future, but tune in next week.
No, I think that's fair. We see that in the preview of Shane.
And then being also, very upset. Like, there's so much strategy to choices. Like, the fact that they can send somebody even to Exile Island, which, you know, has run its course in some ways, but like the fact that Terry readily sends Aris, you know, he's not sending Aris if the immunity idol is still on the island, you know, like those are all information that people can glean from playing the game. Even in Micronesia, when Natalie chose Jason to go, that was so interesting. And, you know, people stan Natalie, but it was really dumb for her to let go of Jason at that point in time, but like it was still iconic. But I think that just shows like very interesting strategic opportunities, and we love choice. You know, we're pro-choice on this podcast.
Pro-choice on Survivor. Pro-choice in all senses of the word. Okay, as someone who's played Survivor, question. Would you drink a glass of milk out there? I can't remember. Did you drink a glass of milk out there?
I didn't, but I would, and I'm lactose intolerant, I think. I'm not sure, but I don't care. I love milk. I'd drink it right off the cow. I would milk my own milk. It doesn't matter. But, you know, that brings us to PB&J as well.
Yes.
And, you know, there's all this discourse about Carson Garrett getting sick from PB&J and puking his guts out. I don't buy it. I don't think that PB&J is that upsetting to the tum-tum. I think it was probably maybe the fact that sometimes we are putting our hands in dirt and then eating right thereafter.
Yeah.
Or, you know, drinking from a well that and not boiling the water, that maybe is to blame potentially more than sweet PB&J.
Ooh, controversy. I would agree. I don't like, yeah, like that's one of like, it's like one of the safest tummy foods.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Unless he's gluten intolerant.
Yes.
Be fair. Maybe he has celiacs. And that's
Carson, if you're listening,
check your gluten status. Don't blame
We're
it on
very
the
worried
or the jelly.
We're very worried. Oh, if I this is like I love peanut butter. If I'm out there, I would be like Kim in Winners at War, like getting down, losing the game for peanut butter.
Oh.
Like if given the chance.
Yeah, I always wanted just a handful of peanut butter and to lick
yes.
it. You know, that's the one thing that I ate before the game started was so okay. Background. I don't know if we want to know all of this TMI information.
We do.
But I was terrified of pooping on Survivor. Like, absolutely gutted. I wanted to not go to the bathroom at all if I could possibly do it. I was afraid to go in the wild, outside, in the water. I didn't know. And the first whole 3 days while I was waiting for the first movement, I was saying to everybody who would listen, like, how do you do this? And Jonathan would coach me on how to actually, like, position every part of yourself. And I was like, well, does it come back to you? Am I going to have to, like, dodge while I'm in the water? Like, what, how does that work? Like, I don't know. I need to know. I'm scared. And it was the most, it was a very big topic of discussion the first 3 days. And then when I did it, I like loved it so much and I hated to go back to the land. But because I was worried about doing that, the morning of, like, you get woken up at so early in the morning, it's like 2 o'clock, and then you get one last meal before you go and everybody's like pigging out. And I was like worried about going to the bathroom. So I went to like empty myself completely. And I was like, well, I can't refill. So I need something high energy, but that's not going to like wreck me. So I just took 2 big spoons and a little bit of fruit, and then also just like dug them into these peanut butter things and then just sat there licking them like an ice cream cone. And what I did not know is the person next to me hated peanut butter and had to watch me do this. And in hindsight, it's kind of funny given who it was, but we won't go there.
Oh man, that's such a beautiful image of you with the 2 spoons. Yeah. What a way to start the game.
Like a little cockatoo. Like, have you ever seen a cockatoo hold a peanut butter spoon?
Oh, a spoon? Peanut butter spoon specifically? No.
Yeah. Incredible.
I'm taking a note to look this up later.
Yeah. Cockatoo. It's adorable.
Yeah. Excellent. It's in my files to a great. I found Albert the African gray parrot on Facebook posting about it. Okay, great. You approve. Fantastic. Yeah. So we do get these cute videos. I want to go through all of them because they're like, we just get these little snapshots. Also, we don't see the full reward, which is rare for old seasons the first of
time
Survivor.
I feel like this was the first time they yada yada'd a reward. I wasn't opposed to it per se, but it did take away from Sally time. So I wasn't a little bit opposed to it at the time.
A controversial choice on the behalf of Survivor Panama for Omar.
Exactly. Like, let's forego looking at these videos, especially to delve into Sally's parent relationship, because they disowned her if you watched the recap episode. Christine, did you watch the recap episode?
I haven't. No, so we did not watch the recap episode. Oh, Omar, now you can tell me.
Hey, well, she had a divorce, and that is not looked highly upon in the Christian community. So her parents kind of disowned her, and they weren't really talking to her. But then that's why it was so surprising when they were on the video, and it was a little bit of an emotional moment, and that they chose to skip over that, so we had to look at Shane's penis. Like, this is ridiculous. And then also, and then that was a funny moment too. But low key, this was one of the best recaps of all time.
I need to watch it because for the podcast, we don't cover it. And so I was like, I'll just watch it after the season.
We know the recaps.
I need to watch it now. Yeah, they always suck. That's why I was like, oh, nothing lost.
This one, the Token Jeans one, and I feel like there's one more that's pretty good because this one is like, there's a lot of new footage and it is like good new footage. It's not like crappy new footage. Some of the Kasaya footage, hilarious. Sally's moment, great. So they showed a lot of the younger women's camp early on and they're like, well, we didn't see any of this, including, you know, Misty lying about her idol more. You know, I thought it was quite interesting. It was one of the better recaps, I have to say.
Okay, cool. I'm going to have an off week from the podcast in a couple of weeks when I'm in Nova Scotia.
Oh,
so I will watch it there. I will watch it when I'm in Nova Scotia.
And let me know exactly what you think of Bob Dog and Danielle starting a fire together, because that is a robbed clip from that main show.
Fantastic. I will fax you my report post haste from Nova Scotia. But yeah, everyone has a dog. Absolutely everyone has a dog.
So annoying.
Anti-dog.
Overrated. You know, dogs have so much dog privilege, it's annoying to me, I think.
Mm-hmm. When are we going to get a bird?
Exactly. Or a hedgehog. Or a, like, preferably a bird, but, like, I'll take a hedgehog. I'll take any sort of representation beyond just the stereotypical dog, which we didn't receive, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately.
Oh, wait, who do you think had the cutest dog, though? Or the ugliest dog? Actually, let's do that. Who had the ugliest dog?
I don't remember. What did Terry's dog look like?
I don't remember any of them, but I felt
I don't remember any of them.
I remember having a visceral reaction to Bruce's dog, so I'm going to assume that was the ugliest one.
That was just the most aggressive one, for sure. That was the one that was, like, barking at the camera.
Yeah. Dogs.
I'll go back and, like, pull images of each one, and I can follow up on Twitter with my full response.
Okay, because I want to see all the images, and I want to decide who is truly the cutest dog and the ugliest dog, and I will be honest about it because I'm not afraid.
Okay, cool.
I did think that Courtney's mom was outrageous.
That was crazy. That was not what I was expecting.
It was jarring. It was a bit jarring, but you could tell, like, she was so prim and proper, but you could tell there's a little crazy behind the eyes, and that, you know, if you got a drink into her, or if she was, like, oppressed in life and then all of a sudden went, like, you know, Rumspringa or whatever, like, you could just see it all come out.
Yes.
Where she's just gonna go full Courtney in, like, a puff of smoke, and then she unveils the crazy within. Like, that was jarring to me. It reminded me of Burton's mom, who was so prim and proper.
For me, she was giving a bit like she would be played by Isabelle Huppert in, like, a weird psychological drama film.
I don't know who that is, but I'll trust you.
Isabelle Huppert, redhead, very, like, stern French actress.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm going to give you a second to look up Huppert, Huppert.
Huppert, okay.
She's quite the woman.
Oh, yeah. She looks familiar. Okay.
Yeah. The second I saw her, I was like, if Courtney's life was a movie, she'd be played by Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah. Do you think that her mom, no, that's kind of rude of me to say, but what if her mom thought about watching the show? It was like, that's my Courtney, or, like, what happened?
I have to feel like people in Courtney's life know she's, like, a challenging person to interact with. Like, I feel like you can love someone and be like, they're a really difficult person. Like, it's like, but parents are so complicated because they don't, like, is she completely like, that's my girl, like, she could do no wrong, or I don't know.
Or hide under a rock. I'm not sure. I'd be interested to know.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, without naming names, if I say this statement, you have 3 seconds from the time I answer this question to picture somebody more annoying than Courtney. Can you do it? Like, does somebody pop into your mind, or is it not?
Okay. It's not possible. Like, no, it's truly, like, what we talked about, I think earlier in the season, I can't remember who I was with. It was just like, it's her inability, particularly, to just not let something go that really hurts her. Like, she just, like, cannot. No, she's like, no, we're going to loop back to that constantly. Like, she cannot let, she has to have the final word. If she had, like, again, like he's like a bit more of, like, reading the room, like, this isn't worth it. Like, no, it's always worth it. It's always worth saying whatever she wants to say. And then on top of that, she's just an interesting character because, like you said, she's so annoying. And, like, not that great at Survivor. I mean, like, she was involved with a good move early on with getting Bob out with a 3-2-1-1. But, like, she's not that great at the game otherwise, but is so serious about winning.
Right. Like, and she thinks she's really good, too.
I know.
She thinks she's really good. Shane thinks he's really good. And I think the thing about Courtney is that people are actually so mean to her. But then also you kind of understand why, because she's so annoying. But it is a bit much. And sometimes when she's standing up for herself, it's like, great, good for you for standing up for yourself. But she does it in the most annoying way that is like, you're not helping yourself, Courtney. Part of you should just shut up, and that would be the best thing for you. But, like, Bob Dog, iconic, being like, I feel bad I deprived them of wine. I don't feel bad for depriving you of wine. Like, that's, I'm actually happy I did that. That's so funny. And that's not too, that's mean, but it's, like, not too mean, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And the fact that she just, like, stay out of Bruce's rock garden, you know, like, just stay out of the rock garden, and, you know, save this clip, and then let's address it next week, you know?
I think we're going to want to address it next week. No, we had said when the rock garden, like, put a pin in that. We might be hearing from the rock garden again. It's been quiet.
And that's why Old Survivor is so good sometimes. They, like, put in little nuggets that will come back in such a way that is so delicious, I feel.
Mm-hmm. No, like, this is, like, I love a season with, like, set pieces, and Kasaya's got some set pieces. Like, we're going to, like, circle back to that. I mean, that's why I wanted to do Vanuatu for the first version of this podcast last year. It's not everyone's favorite season, but they set up relationships and storylines and conflicts to play out in ways we don't expect later on.
And can I just pause on Vanuatu for a minute? Because this is not a podcast, but my God. My God, that was a good season, and it started off so bad, but it got so good. And then they're the best tribal council. I feel like the top 10 tribal council moments is something so subtle. And I don't know if people notice this, but I want to know if you as a Stanawatu noticed it. When Leanne goes home and they're reading the vote slowly, do you see Eliza turn to look at Amy?
Amy chills.
Smugly is like, it's you going home. And then Eliza turns back with a knowing face of what's about to come. And then it just bam, bam, bam. Like, that is such prime, subtle storytelling. That is incredible.
Yes, that is that we talked about that. I have like screenshots of that, of those two back to back, because it's like so perfectly framed. They like them sitting next to each other, Chris behind them, in between them, like watching this play out. It's, I mean, Amy Cusack, yes, one of my favorite old school Survivor characters, one of my favorite Survivor characters, period. Eliza, obviously awesome. Got to have her on the podcast last year. She was an incredible, incredible guest. Yeah, that is one of my favorite episodes of Survivor of all time. My favorite votes of Survivor of all time.
The other funny thing was, you know, show me where the tarot is, just in case, you know. and then the flash forward to Amy, Lisa, and Scout in a conversation where Amy is talking about Lisa to Scout in front of Lisa, but pretending she's not there. So funny. I don't trust her. I don't trust Lisa at all after what she said to me.
Scout like has her swear on a Bible, but just holds out her hands and says, this is a Bible. I'll send you later, I made an edit of the Lisa boot of, you'll see, it's with Kill Bill music, it's quite good.
I need to watch that, especially because Lisa is kind of annoying. So it was actually, she didn't deserve to go home, but it was kind of satisfying, I felt personally.
Yeah, it was
Amy Lisa, was
don't get me started about Lisa. I am obsessed with Lisa. Like, no, that was like one of the things the podcast like really brought out for me. It was like, this is such a weird woman. Like, I love a weird older woman who goes really early, and we're just left with these glimpses. And
thinks they're young. Like, thinks they're one of the 20-year-olds.
And I love a woman with a backup plan.
No, Mia was Rob, just like Misty was.
Okay, that closes the Stanawatu segment for now.
That was a little Stanawatu diverticulum. Yeah.
We can open that up whenever we want.
That was a little hernia. So, we're good.
The other thing I want to say about the family videos, Danielle's family is exactly who I thought they were going to be.
They're so Jersey Shore, and I don't think they're from Jersey, but nevertheless. No,
like, her sister, it was so... love her as well.
So Danielle, it hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's fun, of course, we have to talk about Cerise, because we get to see her the first appearance of her son, Jared.
We'll ever see him again?
I don't know. Hard to tell. So that was just really fun timing to see that. He's, of course, for the listeners unclear, he is on Big Brother with Cerise presently. So it is a fun little moment. And HB, I love HB. To Cerise's other son. I can't remember your other son's name.
Jared, Jamil.
I know, I'm as bad as Amanda and Parvati at the Micronesian Final Tribal Council during answering Eliza's question that never aired. We'll talk about it. But like, no, if you look up Eliza's posts on Survivor Sucks from 2008, she was like posting like right after Micronesia ended, and she had a question. The question we saw was I think it was just more of a statement. But then the question she asked was like asking them, name a presidential candidate, name Alexis's brother's, like someone's dog's name.
That girl.
And name Ceree, one like Ceree's kids.
I think was one.
And Amanda and Parvati could not answer like any of it. And that's why they didn't include it, because it made the finalists look so bad.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I have like name blindness. I can't remember anybody's name when they tell me. And I think sometimes it's because we often, to take a serious note, I think sometimes when we are conversing but nervous, we will often, like when you're not sure what you're going to say, you'll like take in the name and then completely forget it right away. And sometimes it's, I find it's more relevant to know who is in somebody's family as opposed to the details of what they or the names are or what they do. I find that harder to remember. But they probably should have known, because they did.
It is funny. When it's a game where you're trying to get close to people, and it is very funny. So yeah, the bizarre team of Bruce, Courtney, Sally, and Terry won. That's why I'm also just sad we didn't get to see this, because it's such like a weird group. Yeah,
completely.
They choose Aris to go to Exile Island, which was all part of his plan. He's like, I want to be sent there so I can find the idol and see if it's there. And he eventually realizes he would not be sent there if it was still there. But he still looks.
Hey, do you think this challenge is where Bruce learned how to run a pyramid scheme, or no? Because it was kind of like a triangular shape.
Wait, did Bruce run a pyramid? Did Bruce run a pyramid
scheme? I'd look into it on your own time.
All right, so I'm going to have cockatoo, peanut butter spoon, and then Bruce pyramid scheme. Great. It's going
to
be,
I'm going to have a lot of the pyramid, to be fair. I'm not sure. Maybe tier two. Maybe tier two. I don't think he was at the top.
I'm going to need to research on this later. But perhaps this is where he got the idea to be involved with some sort of pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
So the real action is not at the reward. It's at Kasaya, which is what we've been referring to. You know, what we don't see is the family love. What we do see is Shane being like, hey, Ceree, take a look at my testicles.
This is so much, first of all, because this is so much. Listen, as somebody who played Survivor at times when it was extraordinarily rainy, yeah, there is moist crotch rot. We saw it on Pearl Islands. Like, we understand the concept of chafing. He should have known he was chafing. And the other thing is, watching the show, you have no idea that there's a full medical team that checks you out every freaking day. You don't need Ceree, who's a nurse, on the island when there's a fully staffed paid medical team, including a doctor. You maybe direct your questions there.
Like, you don't have to show them, just be like,
Ceree.
You can just be like, I have some redness going on down here. Do you think that's a concern? They would probably just be like, it's most likely chafing.
Yeah.
Like, he probably didn't even have to, like, the medical team might not have even needed to, like, do a full exam. Like,
or it's the doctor's job to do it. So, like,
yeah,
tell the doctor. There is a doctor.
No, it is. It's just something that is crazy that, like, this is funny, obviously, and absurd, and Ceree finds it very funny, but it is, like, it, like, I think if this happened now, and we, I don't think this would have happened now. I think this, we wouldn't have seen it, please. But, like, it is something that, like, if you think about it, it's like, okay, she is a nurse, but she's not here as a nurse. She is here to play a game for $1 million where she's in a situation where she might not want to say no for social reasons. And so it's always funny in good ways and bad ways too, when we see these seasons of these things that were presented as very loosey-goosey, but like in any other context would be considered maybe not
this
great.
This is very 2008 or 2006, whenever it was. But then also, you know what really sent me was when Ceree just squealed, your clothes are moist. That was so funny, and it's so Ceree, and I love her.
And I love, she says, Shane's like a cartoon character, and now he's a nude cartoon character.
So true. A moist, so good. Yeah, like, cartoon character. It sounds horrible.
Ceree's just, we've said it before in the podcast, she's one of the great Survivor narrators. She could make any scene so compelling. This is already so absurd, but she is such a funny person to have this happen. But he puts on his shaping skirt and all as well.
And you know what's also interesting is Danielle, and wait, that's a weird thing that I never thought I would say. You know what's something interesting? Danielle,
I find her very interesting.
Let me digress, because that just shook me for a minute. But Danielle and Ceri have the same reactions to everything, but Danielle's so sour about it and Ceri's so fun about it. It's kind of like, what a dichotomy.
She was just like, what's wrong with him?
Yeah, she's like, I don't care that they went on the reward. Also, what I really loved earlier in the season when she started yelling as well. I'm glad that we're doing Danielle's voice on the show. But
yes, of course.
I get the fire. I get the food. What are you talking about? I'm not lazy. Yeah, Danielle, you're lazy, but it's fine. Just own it.
I stand. She can be lazy. I love it. She's like, you know, they get their videos. They get their luxury items. It's a double whammy.
Do you think that, okay, it sounds like you're a Danielle stan.
I am.
But I am not per se, but I did find her to be more interesting in Panama than Heroes versus Villains. And I think it's one of the most stark contrasts of somebody who is so important to one show being so irrelevant to the next. And I guess she was relevant to an extent, but like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I think that she also, I can't really skip ahead, but I have a controversial opinion about, I don't think it's that controversial actually, but I have a check back with me in a few weeks and then we'll chat about Danielle.
I mean, Danielle was like, I think her problem was of Heroes versus Villains is that she's a fun character on Panama, but she's not a good choice for a villain.
No, not a good choice for a villain. And she's,
and the reasoning behind it is very flimsy. The reasoning behind a lot of the choices is very flimsy, but their Danielle reasoning is particularly flimsy.
Yeah. And she also, like, the thing is, you can't cast Danielle if you don't have Shane. There's no point.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
When he was supposed to, and then they booted him for Russell.
So then they should have booted her and put on, I could name a better villain. They should put Amy back on, you know?
Yes, Amy.
Like, Eliza back on as two Peters or three Peters. They could have done anybody else. But I thought that Danielle or Corinne, I think Corinne turned it down, but.
Yeah, I think she did. I think she was Danielle, busy.
Yeah, Danielle on Heroes versus Villains was just so. She just had all the wrong opinions and it was so annoying to watch. And it's like, you don't question Sandra. When you're Danielle, you know, chill.
I do love Danielle in Heroes versus Villains for, I think her boot is great. I think her, that is like one of the most randomly brutal vote outs for kind of no reason. And she's so upset about it. It's like some actual really good drama. And then we brought it up last week, the Treasure Island scene.
Oh my God.
I mean, I wanted to take her on.
I tackled her to the ground and I ripped it out of her hands. You did not do any of that. Play back the clip, Danielle. She handed it over to you. So what are you talking about?
Well, do you know this? Okay, this came up last week, so sorry for people listening to both these episodes. But do you know that Colby has claimed that was a reenactment?
Wait, what?
So Colby claimed in an interview. So I want to get a Danielle interview so I can get her side of things. Because he has done an interview. Maybe he was an Ask Me Anything. I can't remember.
Wait, can you repeat that? Because when you said, I want to get a Danielle interview, it just sent me again to a place of, wait, what?
I just want to hear her speak. But listen, she's my random, every gay person has a random woman that they're like, yes, queen. And that is me for Danielle. I'm like, she is so funny. But yeah, no, Colby has claimed that the fight happened, but that they didn't get like good coverage of it, or for whatever reason, they weren't happy with what they got. It's the same thing with like Rob passing out early on in the season where they just had him reenact it.
I had no idea. And the thing is, okay, so maybe she really did rip it out of her hands, but it really made her look
super that's the thing.
And that's really funny.
That's why the interview and the video is lining up does not make sense. And it's because what we saw in the video was just like a loose reenactment of it, and it might have actually been more intense. They weren't happy with the footage they got.
Right. This also reminds me of the fact that I can be so stupid as well in general. Like when I first started Survivor, they intervened me. And I was like, I'm the dumbest smart person you'll ever meet in your life. And it took till the age of 20, whatever I was, I think it was 20, when I watched Heroes versus Villains. And I watched that scene where I was like, oh, now I understand why sets are sets. Because I always thought when they have a house in a show, like a sitcom, I was like, why are they doing, why do they have a set? Like, why don't they just film it in a house? And then I saw this and I was like, that's why they don't film it in a house. It looks terrible.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
So it looked even more terrible until they redid it, apparently. I want them to release the original footage, whatever they have. We can like piece it together. It's like the Zapruder film of our time.
So Colby, a weak man for telling Amanda to hand it over. She should have kept the clip. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. No, that is why I'm glad that we got Danielle in that season, even if there were better choices, because we at least got Treasure Island.
The only reason I was happy Danielle was on Heroes versus Villains is because people would chill the fuck out. Oh, wait, I can't say that. People would chill out about Candace because Candace obviously deserved it more than Danielle. So at least they would ease up on her, you know?
Mm-hmm. You can say whatever you want over.
All right. Well, I just swore. But Candace was a hero. And Danielle. Actually, you know, truly, they should have put Candace on the Villains tribe. Somebody else on the Heroes tribe.
Yeah, exactly. Period. That they were just throwing things at the wall.
Sally.
Switching people over. There we go.
Sally actually should have been a returnee, in my opinion.
She could have been a great second chances candidate if like second chances had been a thing in the older seasons. By the time it happened, she was just like too small of a character too long ago. But she's someone we could have reasonably seen on a ballot if they had done one of those sooner. Rob Goddess.
Yeah.
So everyone gets... Everyone gets their luxury items who went on the reward. Terry gets his American flag he has a connection. It's not just a random American flag. I believe it's his father-in-law's funeral. I can't remember if it's his father's
funeral. Yeah, I did roll
funeral.
My eyes, and then he explained, and I was like, okay, bad for rolling my eyes.
No, I had written in my notes, Terry's fucking American flag, LOL, and then he said that, and I just like backspace and just said, Terry's American flag.
NVM. Like,
there we go. Sally brought her journal. An introspective queen.
Yeah.
Bruce brought his sketchbook. I would love to see what he's drawing.
His flag is pretty good.
Yeah, his flag. No, we just
only
he
could
that
run
like
a pyramid scheme,
flags.
Like he could paint a flag. I'm sure.
Okay, Omar, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna need help with this because I just googled Bruce kind of guy pyramid scheme and nothing came up. So off the pod, you're gonna have to push me in the right direction. And I'm usually really good at finding things. I do have an information studies
rumors.
Degree.
I'm kidding. I'll see if I can. I heard about this. I don't know. I'll look it up for you.
if it turns out Omer's spreading a lie, we will put in like a message being like, please don't sue us, Bruce. Sweet, you did not start a pyramid scheme. I'm gonna make Omer apologize on air.
He definitely didn't start one. You know?
Okay, but maybe participated in one.
Maybe unknowingly.
Unknowingly.
To say.
This has me so intrigued. I'm excited for you to follow up on this with me. So, but the most important luxury item is Courtney with her fire toys.
Oh my God. Courtney is so annoying. Like, it would be cool if anybody else did this, but like, she just so empowered by it. For what? You know, like, Courtney is the most annoying when she is on top and like empowered and happy. When Courtney is happy, that is when she's the most annoying person in the world. And this is an exact example of that. Like, these people's lives are on the line and you're gonna prance around in your old fire suit instead of playing the game.
Fire suit. But I had my mind thought people were going to be more annoyed towards her about this, but this is actually the moment where we don't see that much Courtney hate. Because Cerie's like, Cerie's kind of like, you know, fuck Courtney, but that's pretty cool. Like, I wish she wasn't so happy, but those were really cool.
You know, I guess there is a situation where it's so boring out there that you are looking for anything that will keep you entertained. And people really, you know, fire is mesmerizing, you know?
Yeah.
Not a pyro, but...
And as Courtney says, it's for everyone. Like, we can all use them.
Yeah. Shut up, Courtney. You just wanted to shut up, Courtney. Like,
Oh my God. So before the immunity challenge, we get Sally being like, okay, Terry, what the fuck are we going to do? Like,
He's like, what immunity?
He's like, yeah, what immunity? And then like, you're going to have to convince them to come over and help us. It's like, okay.
I mean, that might have been the best idea he ever had because Terry, you need to send Sally. You need to send Austin. Stop doing it yourself.
She's from the Midwest. Like, let her use her powers.
Yes.
Like,
She was Carolyn before, like, Carolyn, Minnesota Queen.
Yes, yes. So yeah, immunity challenge. This is Jeff has them grab a nut in a shell and says, "Show me the nut if you're gonna
if you're gonna splurge on food.
If you're gonna splurge on food." And like it's one of those like kind of classic boring survivor challenges, like swim. Go dive down, do run back, try
the
to
swim
remember
so
what you
far.
Did.
Like, I can memorize those seven things. Also, come on. Three of those symbols were the same, and they were the beginning, middle, and end. Like, that is so easy. Like, make it a little bit more difficult, Survivor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, I don't... Would you have played or would you have passed? Were Lamina, because...
Okay.
Would you be good at this challenge, first of all?
I think I would. I mean, I'm a good swimmer. I'm not the fastest swimmer. I think I have I think I would do okay with the memorization. It's just a matter of, like, it's hard because you have to, like, try to, like, reason out who am I going to compete against? Like, who's going to play, like, reasonably. I think I more likely would have, like, just taken the food because I'm a good swimmer, but, like, a lot of it's going to come down to who swims the fastest. And I'm, like, not the fastest swimmer in the world.
So, I mean, this might surprise you, but I'm not the best swimmer. And so I don't know, but I am a really good at memory. But if I'm on Lamina, I don't think I can sit out. But if
that's
on Kasaya, it's like...
Like, yeah, like Lamina, like, I feel like you just have to, like, because it's like, you're going to, if you go, you're going to be kicking yourself. Like, I didn't even try.
Right.
Even if you're,
I
like,
would
reasonably...
play. Because even though as a slow swimmer, if I have the best memory and everybody else screws up, I could win that way.
Yeah, yeah. It would be something I would definitely have to think about. But I think, yeah, if I'm Kasaya, I'm not.
Those cheeseburgers
I don't blame
did
anyone
look good,
at Kasaya.
Like, I was sad a little bit at home.
I mean, I'm also a vegetarian now, so they would have to have vegetarian burgers.
They didn't used to be inclusive, but now I think.
Yeah, now they are. I can't remember it was Angelina who was like, I know for sure. Angelina and Mike White, by the time they played, they were including like vegetarian and vegan options. I like to think Angelina is the reason they did it, but I'm sure they had already.
She does negotiate a lot, so that does make sense.
But Jeff gives Kasaya a really hard time at Tribal about sitting out, which that's his job.
He like
Jeff,
hates
he heckles.
Danielle. He heckles
hates
like
Danielle.
He hates Danielle, and she can say anything without him jumping down her throat because he's all about Team Terry. But also
that's the reason she's on the villains tribe, because Jeff personally hates her.
But also she's not good at arguing either. Like he's going in on her a little bit rough and unnecessarily because he's clearly biased, but she is dumb.
She's a meathead. That's how we described her, and I stand by it. She's a meathead.
Truly.
But yeah, the people who sit out, it's Bruce. Yeah, you don't see him going hard on Bruce for sitting out.
No. But Bruce maybe should have sat out.
Yeah, we're gonna have to keep a pin on.
I don't know how the next 12 to 24 hours are gonna go.
Yeah, as we see next time, he seems to be having some tummy troubles. If we've noticed, Bruce has eaten a lot the past 10 days.
Beef is tough to digest out there. As we have,
yeah, I can
imagine.
It's
a tale as old as time. If you're old and you eat beef, your prostate will not be happy because it will be obstructed by your mega colon.
Period. Mega colon period. Do you think anyone has ever said mega colon period before?
I mean, I have said it quite a few times as a veterinarian. However, I think if you're over the age of 50 and you have a prostate, you should not eat beef on Survivor. Can that be one of the rules of Survivor? Like, you know how David Bloomberg has the rules of Survivor? That should actually be on the list.
Do you have any other rules to add?
Sally is never wrong. Ever.
And you should have a pet bird.
You should not actually have a pet bird if you're not going to take care of it properly. That's my PSA.
True.
Because they're smarter than a child sometimes. Yeah. You can tell I've had some trauma.
I can tell.
I don't want to see another bird that's in its cage all the time because it can't Aww. Be let out and it's so scared and it's plucking all its feathers from depression. Wow, that really took a dark turn.
That is really sad. it's an important PSA though. People get animals all the time that they can't take care of or they think that all animals require the same level of care.
Yeah. True.
They don't. Some are they really don't. Easy and some are really hard. Some and are cats really are stupid. Easiest.
You want an easy pet? Get a cat. Just going to sit there, do its own thing, piss in a litter box. Just have to change it once a day. That's it.
Yeah. It's even easier if you have a really stupid cat.
Oh, yeah. I met a stupid cat the other day, actually. She was really cute. She was sick. She was mine.
Stupid in what way?
She didn't. Well, so she was so cute. She's loafing. And I opened the cage up to... I was at work and I don't work with cats, but I just walked by and I was like, wow, what a cute cat. So then I opened the door to pet her head and she had no response. Like it wasn't positive. Like I like this, like into it. It wasn't get away from me. She just sat there as if nothing, like Danielle, like nothing was going on. It was incredible.
And you're like, this cat is giving Danielle a tribal council.
I think I actually like changed the name tag to Captain of Sports.
Captain
Cat. Cat. Cat-patin of sports. Oh. I made it a pun. I'm going to actually do that and then send a picture to you someday.
That'd be great. I'm going to be waiting for it and I won't know when it's going to happen.
And then it'll just happen. She has to be a stupid cat. Because there's some smart cats, but I need a stupid cat again. Maybe that one will come back.
Yeah. I had a really stupid cat growing up. We had like four cats and one of them was... Two of them were very problematic, and one of them was a genius, and one of them was the stupidest cat you've ever met. And the genius Ederson. Cat.
Ederson?
Ederson?
It's a one world joke.
Oh! Wait, what is that joke?
Cat Ederson.
Oh, Cat Ederson. I forgot I'm her kidding. Last name.
I love Cat.
I know, but also that's a true joke. And they like stayed in a, none of our listeners are going to care about this, but I'm telling the story anyway. And they had a cage together and the one really smart cat could like flip open with his paw, like the lock, like up and over and get out. And he like got out and like got into the garage and could like press the garage door button open and like leave and then come back. And then the other cat, after he had like gotten, could get out by himself, he like the door would kind of like slightly close. And one time we saw him after the cat had gotten out and he was just at the back of the cage, like just flipping his paw up. Like he had seen the other cat like open the cage and it was already open, but he's like, okay, I gotta just get this one open now. So
that's corny. My cat.
That's corny. There we go. So they show Jeff the nut, they run the challenge. Shane really pigs out. Shane's like, we get some great images of Shane.
Is that I was confused because he had a bite of a burger, but then it looked like a fry was dangling. But was that a piece of burger? I was confused.
I was wondering if that was like a piece of onion.
Oh.
I thought it was maybe like onion on a burger.
For a good 10 years, I thought it was a fry, and then this has changed everything.
I've just actually, I've rocked your world.
Yeah.
And... yeah, so Terry wins. I love this because I hate Terry for winning even more than they usually do, because him winning means they have to stop eating. So it's like even more to like feel their disdain. Like, dude, you couldn't have held out for like five more minutes.
You know, I was also classless of Courtney as walking towards the food, be like, get Amaris. It's like, shut up.
Get Amaris.
Shut up, Courtney. Shut up.
Absolutely classless.
What did Sally ever do to you?
Yeah. God bless Sally. She really, you know, she put tried. In a good try. Yeah. She tried. I mean, if she
was a challenge beast, you know, last episode where Austin went home, she freaking gave Terry a run for his money and made it all the way to the end of that challenge. That was impressive.
And he had to do that stupid little somersault win.
And those knee socks. My God.
Mm-hmm.
Had Misty Papaya flashbacks.
But it would have been so much more interesting if Sally had won, because Terry would have had to play the idol.
Yes, I think 100%.
It's just like, that would have been so interesting.
Yeah, that's where I was almost like, I wish they would have like planned it. Like, okay, ours is going back in the water. We should give this to Sally right now because it'll force them to turn on each other. But
Terry's too focused simple. On.
Terry's, he's, What do you call like a simple brain?
A simpleton?
Yeah, I guess he's a simpleton. Small brain.
Small brain. He's got a tiny little brain.
A to B. That's all we see, you know?
So yeah, Terry wins. Everyone's very sad. And they're like, all right, we got to deal with this again. We'll just get rid of Sally. And camps at Camp Ars is like, okay, Terry has it or no one does. Like, which is, I think, should have been clear to everyone that Terry has it or no one does. And Terry probably has it. But again, we're new to the idol. We don't know how hard it is to find.
Right.
But he's basically like, okay, we have to like, you know, assume kind of he has it. And they're like, okay, our plan is just throw all of our votes on Sally and hope to help
hope Terry play it for her.
Yeah. And it's like, they've created such a perfect opportunity for Terry to give the idol to Sally and for them to like pull off something big, but they don't because Terry won't give it up.
Yeah. Well, see, okay, so there's two. Well, I think, so what's interesting is there was a secret scene at the time because I was very much into all of this information and also on the early show. Do you remember the early show with Sally?
No, I do. I'll be real. I do not remember the early show with
so
Sally.
So Harry Smith did weight shame her, which was awkward.
Oof.
Yeah, it was not good.
We do not like to hear it.
Yeah, it was awkward. But then also they played the clip where Sally told Terry, if people are not going to flip, you should keep the idol for yourself because you're going to need it moving forward. If you can't flip anybody, then, you know, saving me isn't going to change anything long term for you. And I think that's a very noble thing for her to do. We stand. I wish she hadn't. I wish she would burn Terry's idol, gotten it out of there. But I think that opportunity for people to like flip and turn on each other was lost with the approach that they took as opposed to anything else.
Absolutely. And Sally just basically tries, like what you were saying, it was not going to work, which was go to the Kasai women being like, help come vote Aris out with us. And it's like, why would they do that if
when you already can do it without them?
Yeah. And they don't, they can be like, oh no, Aris win and he won't be burned by them. Yeah. It's
I mean, she is right.
So
when
close
she said,
to making, yeah.
Yeah. She's
that's
right.
They're
when
so
she
close
said,
to making the right
gonna
argument.
Happen anyway. You're going to have to turn on each other anyway. And that's true. But you didn't let them do it. You know, you gave them an out. You gave them an easy. It's exactly like on Karamoan, what the Three Amigos did when they said we're voting for Philip Shepherd. Because they said we're voting for Philip Shepherd. And why would anybody else care?
They're like, that sounds great. Yeah.
All right. And you do that. And if he goes home, I'm still here. You know, that's why you be like, one of us is voting for Don. One of us is voting for Andrea. And one of us is voting for who else could be thrown to the bus here? One of the Philip. One of us is voting for Philip. You do you then, you know, like, I don't know. But I also Aris. So I really did eventually grow to like Aris, but especially in Panama, he just takes himself so seriously.
Yes.
It's like, it's too serious. Like, it's like, just chill a little bit, you know, like you don't need to be so, you don't need to take yourself so seriously because it's just embarrassing, you know?
Like, it makes him a great character on Kasaya to be, like, the, like, really self-serious dude among this, like, band of nutballs.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There's no sense of self-humor or self-deprecation there at all. And it's
like,
a bit off-putting.
Like, you guys, like, come on. Like, they're going to vote me. Like, understandably, he's worried that they're going to vote him, but he's just like...
Especially early on when he was trying to be so smug and condescending to Bruce, who is, like, 70 years older than him.
Yes.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
No, he's so...
Who is this guy?
He hates Bruce.
You live in your father's basement. Like, chill.
He's like, this dude won't stop making his rock garden. We all have to... We have a fire.
We all have to work. Like, we all have to... We Bruce, we all have to... contribute to the tribe because we're
really
a team. We're a team right now. I don't know if you know. Like, chill.
You're the first Aris impressionist we've gotten on the podcast. Congratulations. We've gotten a lot of Terry's and Danielle's and Courtney's and maybe some Shane's, but we have not gotten Aris yet. So you're the first.
Jeff said that Aris is so boring, and I don't really think he's boring. I think that he can be very smug at times, a very good character, and a good foil for Terry. Person.
After Sally is like doing her, you know, rally and cry to the Kasaya woman, it's Terry doesn't go to Courtney. Courtney goes to Terry. Like they, it's like, I forgot that like they, he still does not try Courtney. It's only because she's like, Courtney confronts him about the idol. And then he finally is like, oh yeah, you and Bruce should come over and vote with us. Like, yeah, like Courtney, like Bruce's best friend, Courtney, of course they're going to flip together. Like Danielle and Bruce wouldn't flip. Shane and Suri wouldn't flip. Let's try Courtney and Bruce, like famously really good friends. It's so, and it's just so funny that he didn't, like, I, in my mind, I was like, oh, he finally pitched her. And then I remember, no, it's like, no, she like was like, dude, you have the idol. Like, what are you going to do? And she actually, she does think about it. Like, this is the, in her confessional, she genuinely
yeah, that's what I'm saying. She's thinking about it.
So that's why I think if they had started out on her earlier, I think they maybe could have made something happen. I don't know if it would have ultimately.
Or took a different approach.
Yeah, like they had more time. Like we noticed like the merge vote wasn't even one of those merges where you vote that night or the next night. They had a full 3-day cycle before the merge vote. And then another one and now another one. Like they had so much time to like really correctly identify a crack, and they did not do it until right now.
I think they just had an aversion to her because she's so annoying. I think you're right.
Yes, which is fair. I think it's fair. They're like, I'd rather lose $1 million than have a conversation with Courtney one-on-one.
I love when, and the thing of the this, you can't even stop talking. It's like, it's impossible to stop talking about Courtney, but also her relationship with Shane is the weirdest thing of all because she so desperately wants his approval and he so openly dislikes her. And yet, there is this weird codependency that does go both ways. It's bizarre, and I hate it. But I also am intrigued by it. And I also love when Shane was like, oh, Danielle, why do you have such an aversion to working? An aversion to working. He's so abrasive, and yet somehow got away with this for so long.
Yeah, like, it's really one of the great, like, not mysteries, because Kasaya is Kasaya. It's just like, crazy Shane is here. Like, just like Kasaya got so lucky with, not lucky, but he got so lucky with when Kasaya won challenges and when they went to tribal council.
Yeah. I mean, I think also Shane, like, he is like wild and crazy. And some people like, he's Shane, he can't help himself. But I disagree because you can see that Shane doesn't treat everybody the same way. He only treats the people that he can get away with it the way he does. And oftentimes it is the younger women. He has control over his behavior more yes. than he, like, people give him credit for. And that takes, I think sometimes people take away, like, that personal accountability.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a choice.
That's it is a choice. And I'm sure next week Shane's going to say something really, really normal that isn't concerning at all.
And yet, what are we going to take issue with?
You know? Yes, yeah.
That will be interesting to see.
That would be interesting. So
threaten my life, but don't talk about my house.
Oh, I'm so excited for that. This is like the whole podcast is like building to that episode. I'm so excited. Next week's gonna be a banger. But yeah, so they try to get Courtney to flip. She's weighing her options. But Suri is talking to Bruce and like is like, he's not gonna give it to Sally. That would be the worst move in Survivor history, which is very fun to hear Suri say because she will later on cause someone to make do the even worse move.
Yes.
Micronesia. So it's a fun, like, unplanned foreshadowing. No one could have known that would happen, but that's
and this is like classic. This is like classic Suri, her manipulation style, her gameplay style. Like, you can see it coming out, and this is where it's like forming. It's so cool to see it so early on because, you know, you can flash back to Heroes versus Villains and see how she's talking to Rupert and James and be like, why are we voting out? Why are we keeping Tom? We should be voting. We shouldn't be voting. You want to vote Candace out now? Like it's the same type of like, what are you doing? This is stupid. You know, like she has a way, but it's like, it's a soft pitch, but it's direct, you know? And I think that's so interesting. And I love to watch it.
Yeah, it's what we saw in the last episode with Ara getting mad at Courtney. Like, she doesn't tell him, you're being an idiot, but she's like, look at yourself. Like, you don't want to be fighting right now. And he's like, yeah. Like, she's able to do it in a way that, like, helps people realize what they should be doing, which is what Suri wants.
Yes,
which is exactly. Suri, it's in Suri's best interest if Ara and Courtney stop fighting because it's in her best interest for Kasaya to stay together. And yeah, it would be stupid. I see why from a perspective, people be like, oh, it's stupid for Terry to give up the idol. But like long term, it's not the worst move. But right. She needs to convince Bruce it's absolutely not worth flipping over.
Yeah.
When absolutely. For him, it probably is because we.
Oh,
Kasaya doesn't really respect him at all.
No. And the thing about. So Bruce is such an underrated Survivor character. Mm-hmm. At first, you know, at first glance, you see the confessional charts, you see his. visibility charts, you're like, okay, he's like not that important of a character. And I think that he easily gets lost in what is Keziah, but he's so delusional and so easily manipulated that he is an excellent character for Survivor. Like, he's like, they all respect me, but they're like literally pretending to respect him so that he does what he wants. It's incredible.
And I love a guy with lots of like B-roll footage, and he has a lot of B-roll footage of him like
a lot of B-roll, yeah,
just hanging out on the beach, like
sketching. Like a,
look at this guy footage,
yeah.
And then leading up to Tribal, we have Courtney fire dancing, and while she's fire dancing, Terry's like, "Fuck her, like she won't flip."
Yes, yes. Make a decision, and also, oh yeah, Bruce. That's what I was going to say. Bruce is so early, less bombastic, less fake coach.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I think we brought this up before. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. It's right there.
Bring him back.
Courtney.
Courtney. At Tribal.
And he climbed to the top of the pyramid this time.
I really want to know.
Can he not obstruct his prostate and colon?
So, Jeff, at the that'd be a really good commercial. At the Tribal, Jeff is commenting again, like I mentioned, he's like, really, like, you guys sat out, that's very cocky. And everyone's just like, you know, he calls out certain people very specifically, Danielle. As we said, it seems like Jeff has really got it out for her. And there's a lot of conversation about how strong Terry is. Terry, ever so humble, says, I'm gonna keep winning immunities whether they like it or not, which is really I mean, at this point, now that he's made the decision to like now that he's made the decision to not play the idol, like, yeah, that's his only play, is to, for that to keep happening.
Absolutely.
And the on the org where I played with Carolyn, I was the Terry Dietz of the season. I was on the bottom, and I could not get anyone to flip. Because Carolyn was at the top of her alliance. I was trying to get everyone to flip on her. Force rocks. Like, the guy we were trying to force rocks with, he accidentally voted wrong and got himself voted out 4-3-1. And then I just had to keep winning in every round. I would just be like, I'm still here. Like,
and I'm staying.
Yeah. Like
the Terry Dietz, the PG, the Sheehan.
Yes. Yeah, so I, as someone who has been in that position, you, at a certain point you do like be like, okay, this is kind of fun. Like, this is just what we're doing.
Well, and that's, I never got to experience that. Like, mm-hmm. your back's against the wall openly and you can do whatever. You can just burn the house down. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what that's like. I don't know what it's like.
No, it's really fun. Playing on the top, I'm saying this is all from orgs. Playing on the top is really stressful. Playing in the middle is really fun and fun, but also really stressful. Playing on the bottom, you're just like, it cannot get worse.
Yes.
Like, some of the most fun I've had playing those silly little games were playing on the bottom, for sure. Like, playing in the middle is fun, but then it's like you have so much to lose. But like, what are you going to do? Vote me out? You were already going to do that.
Yeah.
So Danielle, another great Danielle moment. She says, it's always about Terry, Terry, Terry.
I'm not knocking a competitor. I'm a competitor too. I'm captain of sports.
I'm captain of sports. Yeah, Jeff really hammers her. That was all I took notes on for this Tribal. Was there anything else you want to talk about? That was just a funny moment for me. It's just,
you know, Sally did say she was sick of these six, and I agree.
Agree.
They should have turned on each other. And I don't even know how these people lived with each other. I don't even know how they won so many immunity challenges pre-merge. That was reckless.
Yeah.
Like, of Lamina. How do you lose when you're Lamina?
You could have saved. Because of Ruth Marie. Could have saved Misty.
Yeah, could have saved Misty. It's because of Dan and Ruth Marie, honestly.
Yeah. Misty and Emerge. Merge Misty. I think she could have.
Oh, yeah.
Turned things around for them.
Wrecked it up. It's just so, you know, Lamina, the worst part of Lamina was like, how obvious is it for you five men to stick together or four?
Yeah,
four of them.
Four.
So boring.
And then
you just, if you're going to do it, you really have to pull in Ruth Marie, Dan. Like, come on. So ridiculous.
All roads lead back to the Ruth Marie problem.
Yeah, this is all Ruth Marie's fault. Truly.
When I started this podcast in the first episode, we joked that it was the summer of Ruth Marie. And it is in a bad way.
When she got dragged to the other math.
Yes, yes.
Her face was terrified, and there was nothing she could do.
She could do. Bring back those challenges. I want to see people get, like, dragged.
You know,
like,
I was like terrified to do, I was terrified to do any wrestling challenge, because I'm going to hurt myself, dislocate my knee again, whatever. But then when I
saw her shoulder.
Cast, yeah, but when I saw her cast, I was like, I would wreck Daniel. I would destroy Zach.
Oh, absolutely.
Kill Romeo. So I was like, let's go. I'm ready.
And they didn't throw any of the... You guys didn't have any physical challenges, right? Yeah. They...
Nothing like that. But I would have destroyed those three
boys. Let the record show.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We got to get you and Zach. In,
I would have sat on Romeo and you would have never seen him again.
We got to get you and Zach as the 242ers who have been on this podcast to do like a cage match like Musk and Zuckerberg are going to do. I know who I'm putting my bets on.
Yeah, thank you. I agree.
Yes. So, yes. We lose Sally 6-2. They vote for
Sally's eulogy. I mean, yes. Sally was a great underdog. She was a big fan of the show. She actually was leading a lot of the confessional charts, if people did not know. She... had a great story, and she was fighting against a bunch of losers that were kind of too basic for her, you know? And I think that they needed to show her some more respect to her. And I think that Lamina was lucky to have her, and she should have flipped on them, but she was too good a person, and she was too good to Terry, even though Terry didn't deserve it. And it was noble of her to say, don't play your idol on me. And she should have been a returning player, because she was a fan favorite at the time, whether people know it or not now. So there's that.
Period.
Yeah. So they actually, they like CBS used to run a popularity poll on their website or whatever, and then they stopped it by the time Panama rolled around, but you could kind of see who people liked based on their poll of who is going to win the game. And Terry and Sally were at the top of the list at this point.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
Yeah, so screw you, everybody that didn't bring her back.
Sally's the real winner. I hope she's doing well.
I hope so too. I hope her parents are talking to her.
T-Bird, please give her a call.
Yeah, and your connection, T-Bird, is through RC, because RC has taken a picture with Sally. That's the last sighting we've ever had.
Do you have like the Schumann files?
I mean, that's the only... That's the only document within the file.
move over, Colleen. And also, we have a new mysterious woman from the old school era.
Exactly. So we have one picture of RC and Sally spotted together. And then there's a voodoo doll of Harry Smith for weight shaming her because she gained all her weight back after starving on an island.
Come on.
Like, shut up, Harry. Don't ask. He literally asked her how much she weighed. It was weird.
Does Harry have people podcasting about him like 8 years later? However many years it's been? It's been longer than that.
Exactly. I mean, I guess technically speaking, but we're not saying good things. Mm-hmm. Harry Styles. I mean, not Harry Styles, Harry Smith. Also, fuck him too.
Fuck him. Okay, I'm going to read Sally's final words. Do a dramatic reading. Sally, I'm not disappointed that Terry didn't give me the hidden immunity idol. He has a huge uphill battle ahead of him. I'm disappointed that I cannot be there fighting in the trenches beside him. But I've found so much inner strength, and I'll take that with me. And I learn about myself in all of this. You know, I fought hard, and I feel great, and I have no regrets. Sally, I salute you.
As
your tribe saluted astronaut Dan on his way out.
Oh my God. Thank God for Exile Island saving her that one time. Can you imagine if those four men had got into the merge and Dan wouldn't... You know how many people Dan would have... We would have had to hear him tell all these new people that he was in space. You know how insufferable that
space,
would have been?
You know that? You know that thing, space? Oh, I've been there.
You see the sky? I was there.
Oh, yeah, she and her best friends.
Yeah, I flew over you when you were just a baby nursing, you know, like, shut up, Dan.
So, Omer, do you have anything else to wrap up this episode? Anything we didn't touch on? Any little funny things? Closing thoughts before we pick our episode titles?
No, I just remember that I was really depressed when Sally got voted out the first time, and I didn't want to watch the show anymore. But then I was glad I tuned into the next week because it was pretty good. But I wish Mega Colon had been 3 days earlier. Even 24, 48 hours earlier would have been great.
The game-changing moment.
Yeah. Why did that Mega Colon have to set in too late? Why didn't that prostate obstruct earlier is my question. And I'm pretty pissed about it because that could have gotten us an extra episode of Survivor Sal.
Survivor Sally. But we didn't. Alternate universe. There's an alternate universe where Sally wins the season because of Mega Colon.
Yeah.
But we do not live in that universe. So, Omar.
What an incredible season.
What an incredible season. And it is time to pick episode titles.
Oh, so do I have to go first?
It's up to you. I give people the option to go first.
Okay, I have three possibilities, okay, but it would help me if you picked one of them so I could at least take one off the table.
Okay, well, I know which one I want to pick. Wait, let me double check. I have three possibilities.
I should see how many of them align after.
I know. I actually have four, but I'm going to go with, I think this is fitting, and I think it's funny, to the tune of the Brady Bunch, Marsha, 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 I'm doing Terry, Terry, Terry.
Oh, okay. That was not on my list, so this doesn't help me at all.
Sorry.
Okay, so can I do mine in like 3-2-1 style?
Sure.
So my last place honorable mention, which I'm not picking, is he flies planes. He's not an American gladiator.
That was one of mine.
Okay, wow. This is like Family Feud. So I've got one on the board. I think that I'm so torn between these two because they're pretty good. But I think that I'm going to give runner up to one of my favorites, which is Silly Idol from that Goofy Island, because it's a little on the nose, you know, like it's like literally it's like a little too obvious. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've heard the first one, you would at least be like, well, what is that about? So the winner goes to Big Brother 25 contestant Ceri Fields, maybe break his arm or something.
That's a good one. I didn't have to. My other ones, I'll give my other ones. I had the gladiator one. I wasn't going to pick this one, but I highlighted Danielle saying double whammy. That seems like a boring episode of Idol Survivor do. And Terry, Terry, Terry. And then just, if I was going to be silly, I was just going to do Jeff saying, show me the nut. I decided to actually pick what I thought would be a funny episode title that would also make sense because it's a pop culture reference. Terry, 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 Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. I don't think Danielle was making that reference, but I'm making that reference.
Yeah.
So for this week's episode titles, we have me with Terry, 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 and Omar with maybe break his arm or something.
And my favorite part of that line was Courtney's reaction to it. Because these three women are sitting in the shelter, just chatting about how they have to get Terry out. And then Ceri makes a clear joke of, maybe break it. How are we going to get him out? Maybe break his arm or something. And then Courtney's like, I can't believe you said that. And she's like, I'm sorry.
Like, just even like, yeah, like not even be able to read that situation correctly. Just like knowing to laugh.
No bigger buzzkill than Courtney Merritt.
Omar, this was a hoot, a delight. I've been looking forward to this for so long, and you did not disappoint. This was such a wonderful way to spend my Friday afternoon. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a great time. Yes. And I can't wait to see what season you cover next.
Yes, I can tell you off pod what I'm thinking I'm going to do.
Okay. I will be back, as Stacey Powell once said.
Yes, I will be back.
So, but then she actually didn't come back. So.
Yes. Yet.
Yet.
Yet. True. This is the longest twist in Survivor history. She's still on that island. So, Omar, where can people find you? Do you have anywhere you want to direct people to? Any causes you want to support? Whatever you want to do in this time.
I am on Twitter. I mean, I guess it's X, whatever.
We don't call it X.
At Omar Zahir DVM. And then Threads and Instagram at OZahir24. Do people even use Threads? I don't understand it.
I don't.
Yeah, whatever. And then, I don't know, I think WildOntario.ca is an organization that changed my life and put me into veterinary medicine. So, and they take care of non-releasable birds of prey and help teach the public about the human impact on wildlife. So if anyone wants to donate anything, just go that way. But other than that, I have to study a lot for my exam. And that's it. I did a Road to Reality podcast with Kellen, which is pretty fun. So yes. You can check that out too.
Awesome. We'll put the link to that that organization in the Twitter thread so people have an easy link to click on it if they want to donate. I'll be quick. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the X-Teen Files. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor. Not much going on right now, but it will be soon when the season starts up again. You can listen to the Shadow Play Gaze, a podcast about the anime Revolutionary Girl Utena. Listen to the mainline Bitter Jurors podcast. They are doing Legend of Korra stuff, and we'll be back, of course, with a draft once we get closer to the Survivor season coming up this fall. So that's everything for me. Thank you again, Omer. This was so much fun. And next week, we'll be back with Medical Emergency, one of the great Survivor episodes, I would say. Another very, very exciting guest, someone I'm really happy to have on and chat with, someone I've never had the opportunity to chat with. So stay tuned for Revenge of Megacolon next week, and have a great one. Bye.